So Candace, this is horrible podcast content, but I'm looking at your earrings that are UFOs shooting down a tractor beam to pick up a cow. And I'm wondering what the story is there.
Yeah, I saw these at a craft show with my little. I thought they were pretty cool. I bought them. I have been obsessed with the X-Files for a long time. And these are an excellent conversation starter, which I think is a big chunk of what we are talking about.
Well, the truth is out there. So we're the Envoy Performance Podcast. My name is Alan Dow. I'm a physician.
I'm Candace Nichols. I am a former chief people officer.
And Candace, why are we here? That's the existential question of the X-Files and probably the existential question of this podcast.
I know. And we spend a lot of our time talking about how leaders can be successful. And there's so much information out there that's very tactical around here's how you have difficult conversations. Here's how you navigate through conflict. We do a lot of that too. But a lot of what you and I spend our times talking about and thinking about is how leaders actually show up as people, and what are the things that they bring to work, that they bring outside of work, that actually impact their ability to deliver, that aren't necessarily related to the tactical things about being a leader. And that's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah, and you've spent a whole career in HR really trying to sort of work through those thorny organizational problems that are really people problems. And so that lens, I think, is just an incredibly powerful way to think about these different problems.
Yeah, and I think these things get overlooked sometimes when we're actually talking about the human connection that people need to have when it comes to being able to do their best work. There's so much information out there about what workers need to be connected to their employer, to be connected to each other, to be connected to the mission of the organization. Does that change when people become leaders? How do we need to think about this differently about, if you're the CEO of an organization, can you have friends within the company? Do you need to think about that a little bit differently? And I'm sure you see this all the time too in your line of work as a physician. What are the factors that impact people's health that impact their ability to do their best?
Yeah, my lens on this is something we have sort of put under our thriving portfolio in Envoy. And so as a physician who's ascended the academic ranks and the leadership ranks to you know, now running a large division with, you know, 100 people in my clinical group, it's a different set of challenges. And the thriving lens, we have six different ways that we look at it. There's different types of fatigue that we label things in and focus on sleep and on exercise and on relationships and on work-life balance and on how you feel sort of purpose in what you're doing, and use those different ways to look at those different kinds of lenses. And I think today we're going to really sort of focus on that social fatigue, and part of that is relationships. Part of it is what is attracting our attention and what we're spending our time on. You recently hosted a women's leadership group. Do you want to talk about sort of your experience in having this first event and kind of what happened with that?
Yeah, it was really interesting. So we, one of our coworkers, Stinson, and I decided to put this group together of women executives. And really, it's just people that we like. And we wanted to bring a group of people together that we thought might like each other as well. There was no agenda for the conversation. And we made that very clear up front, because I think so often these things are just overly scripted and don't give people enough time to just chat with each other. And that was really the purpose of this. And we had half a dozen or so people that came. And as we were talking, it almost immediately turned to this challenge everybody was facing of, wow, I feel like I am making decisions by myself. I'm feeling kind of lonely. How do I actually think about building my support network outside of work? How do I make friends? It's so hard to make friends as an adult. And the fact that everybody was thinking about this and approaching it from a different angle really made us stop and pause about how people could make friends as an adult, because it's pretty challenging. And without having that social circle around you as a leader, how are you making sure that you've got the right influences that impact your ability to lead?
Yeah, it's fascinating, because a lot of people have talked about The isolation of leaders, or sometimes people use the metaphor of the fog of war, where you don't know or don't understand what's going on the front lines. Were these people from all sorts of different kinds of, you know, areas in work?
Yeah, there were a lot of different industries represented. The thing that everybody had in common was that they were a leader, either a CEO or, executive level within their group. And it seemed to be less of a conversation around, I don't have time for this, but I just don't know how to do this. Maybe I'm new to the city and I just am not sure where to even start with having friends, or my position is such that I have always made my friends outside of or within the confines of work. But now there's federal funding concerns that may potentially impact whether I work here, whether my team works here. How do I maintain those friendships outside of work? Is it even okay for me to have these friendships inside of work? And so one of the things that we actually talked about was this, and this is something you and I have spent some time talking about, this like decline of third spaces. Where do people go that's not their house, that's not their job, to actually meet people with similar things in common? And one of the things that came up was your kids' sports. You take your kids to sports, you're going to meet parents who already have a connection to you with, they've got something in common because their kids are all doing the same thing. And then you quickly organize carpools and that kind of thing. But not everybody has kids. You have kids. I'm curious, what have you seen when it comes to something like this?
Yeah, I think when your kids, so my kids are 17 and 15, and when they're younger, there's a lot more opportunities for that kind of thing. And it does peter out. And so you're right. If we're talking to people that are, say around my age of 50, you do have less of those kids sort of creating opportunities. And I can see that if you're younger, say 30s, 40s, you have more opportunities outside of work to make connections to your kids. And you're often having peers at work that you can make friends that way, because you've got coworkers, where when you become the boss, the leader, you suddenly are isolated both at work, and also you don't have those entrees through kids. And it's interesting to think about how those things parallel each other.
How do we, when we're talking to people, how do we give them advice on where to even start? Do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, I do think that we can think about those different spheres that you were kind of alluding to, of how we spend our time. And this outside of work area, there's a lot of things that you can start to then develop new interests in, whether it's volunteering for causes that you care about and are passionate about, or getting involved in different kinds of hobbies and activities. There's been a lot of writing recently about the importance of hobbies and how it helps you perform better in your primary role, your primary job. And so I think that's a sort of interesting kind of thing. I mean, you've really been someone who's, I think, embraced car culture of all things.
Yeah, it's interesting because there is a pretty big community around car enthusiasts of all kinds. My partner and I own a car restoration shop. He make that very clear. I am like an owner in name only. No one wants me doing anything to their cars. There is quite a community around this antique car culture. And there is a local group that we have joined recently. And it has been like an immediate group of new friends for us, because everyone instantly has something in common. Everybody wants to talk about your car and their car. This group in particular also happens to love a potluck. I love a potluck. And so we've been able to go and break bread with people and actually have really interesting conversations. And so now when I am thinking about how I spend my free time, that has become a new part of how I want to make sure I'm carving things out, which has been pretty interesting. There has been also an interesting resurgence in the conversation around, should churches be that third space again? Because there has been a steady decline of people attending church throughout the last 20 years. And I just recently saw a graph where there was starting to be a slight uptick in people rejoining churches. And a lot of it seemed to be indicated by this lack of third spaces, and people wanted the community as much as religion. Have you seen anything like that?
I have not. I don't know that data. So that's fascinating to see. Personally, my wife is some flavor of Christian. She was raised Catholic, and so we did Catholic things for a while. Now we're Baptists. I'm agnostic at best, But I like going to the church for the community. And I also like the quiet hour of provocative conversation around things. I'm not sure I'm a true believer in the Bible, but like hearing the stories helps me think about how can I be a better person. And I certainly believe a lot of the ideas and concepts in the Bible, even if I don't believe the stories are maybe exactly true. And again, agnostic, not sure, but
the idea. I totally get that.
Yeah. And I do think that that exposure to community is important for people. And I could see a rebirth in church happening.
Yeah. And I think oftentimes, especially when we're talking about leaders, we talk about maybe building your personal board of directors or making sure that the circle of people that you listen to for business decisions are the right circle. So how do you think about all these inputs that you're getting from information, whittling that down into maybe the top 10 and then the three or four that truly matter? But what gets missed in that is who you actually talk to for personal things, not outside of work. How do you make sure that you're getting different perspectives on things that could potentially influence work, but just influence you as a person? Why, you know, I know you talk a lot about social fatigue and why building those social connections is really important when it comes to executive performance. If there was one big takeaway that you might have for leaders in encouraging them to think about building a social network differently outside of work, what would that be?
Well, I think there are two things I would say. The first is I think it's important to regularly, once a year at least, do a social inventory where you look at the relationships and who you're spending time with and try to figure out who is adding to your life, your work, what you're doing, both personally and professionally. You can make two different lists, one personal, one professional, and who's subtracting for it. Because the people that are adding to your life, you need to create those venues to spend more time with. And those people that are subtracting, you need to figure out how to manage those relationships. You may not be able to get rid of them, but can you manage them in some way so they're more subtractive in what we're doing? And the second thing, and I think this harkens back to where you started with the women's leadership group, you mentioned that you didn't have any agenda when you met with that group. And I've always thought that with professional development kind of experiences, there's really two things that are going on, two curriculum that are going on. The first is the formal curriculum of, oh, we're going to learn about, you know, this topic. We're going to learn about negotiation, or we're going to learn about conflict resolution, or we're going to learn about giving feedback. And the second is this informal curriculum where you're building relationships, you're networking, you're sort of level setting with people around you that might be peers and what are they doing and whatnot. And what you said there about there was no agenda. We just got people together and had these great conversations, and it flowed into professional stuff, but also personal stuff, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's really important for leaders because of the isolation that people have.
Yeah, I think that's, I think I love that you just hit on that, because when I think about the development sessions that we run, there's several groups that we do cohorted programs with. And so there may be six sessions, and people have the chance to actually get to know each other over the course of those sessions. And there's very intentionally time built in for dinners and for lunches so people can truly get to know one another outside of just what they do for a living. And I think that's also really interesting that when in the US we introduce ourselves to each other, that very often the first question is, oh, what do you do for a living? It's not, where are you from? What are your hobbies? You're so tied up with this identity of work. And so carving out time to actually build relationships based on a different common interest is really important. And again, we talked about work. That was what brought us all to this conversation, because we've all got big responsibilities, but it very quickly shifted outside of that into how we were thinking about what's happening in the world as people, how we were making sure we were there to support each other. Where, how did we give each other advice on just where they could go to potentially meet new people?
Yeah, I that completely resonates with me. I was a member of a leadership cohort type of thing maybe 12 years ago, and made some incredible friends through that. And we were all learning the same content. our lives have gone in completely different paths. And so, you know, some are deans and some are hospital CEOs and some are retired. You know, it's just interesting how people's lives have gone different kinds of ways. We've got the same place that we started, got the same things, but then, you know, we just grew in all these sort of different kinds of ways. And I would guess that with your cohort work that you were doing recently, it'll be the same kind of thing. Those people in 10 years will be in different places, have gotten different things from it. But those friendships,
yeah,
and let's call them friendships, label them. I mean, they're life defining and career defining.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I would say, I want to leave people with a couple of things they can do, tangible takeaways that they can act on to bring people into their social circle. One of the things I really love that you hit on was how you make sure you are being intentional about the people you actually want to spend time with versus the ones that maybe are not additive, but you have to spend time with in some capacity. I have heard you talk about texting people kind of in the moment. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think... it's not easy to connect with people these days. You know, it feels like decades ago, people were just sort of running each other. We lived in smaller communities, and the people that you had some familiarity with because of work or whatever just lived nearby, and or you would see them at the kids' soccer game, to go back to your example from earlier. And so we need to kind of put a little energy towards making those connections. And one of the things that I think is great to do is just send a text. And so if you're listening now, I mean, this is something you can do. Just pause this or right after this is over, send a quick text saying, just thinking about you. You know that person you're thinking about because they're already in your head, and just hope things are going well. Could be a significant other, could be a parent, could be a college friend that you haven't seen, or do all of them. And it's amazing when you send someone a text of just thinking about you, how are things going? The conversation that can flow from that and how you'll make that person glow up to know that someone was thinking about them, because, you know, life does often feel lonely and we don't think people are thinking about us, and knowing that, you know, someone maybe you've not seen in a year, 5 years, 10 years is thinking about you. It's just really important. I try to do it as a almost for a regular thing on New Year's Day. Didn't do it this year because there's a lot going on, but I need to probably get back into it. Maybe I'm going to commit to do that between now and the next time we do this. I'll send happy spring text to a bunch of people that I've been thinking about and hope they're doing well.
I love that. I have taken that advice, and anytime I see something that makes me think of someone that I had that thing in common with, I will immediately text them and say, hey, I just heard this book that you and I had talked about, wanted to say, made me think of you, I wanted to say hi. I have a friend from Spain who, he and I got into an in-depth conversation about Tinto de Veranos one day, which are like this red wine spritzer cocktail, which he said is just a grandpa drink, and I love it. Mm-hmm. So every time I have my first one of the summer, I text him and say, having this Tinto de Verano in your honor. I hope you're well. And it just continues that relationship, even though he's in Chicago and I'm here. The other thing that I would maybe encourage people to do, and this is something I have had to be very intentional about because we all do this. You bump into someone that you haven't seen in a long time and you're like, we should grab coffee. And then that coffee never happens because no one ever schedules it. Schedule it right then. Mm-hmm. Like, find a date right then. I have really tried to get better at that. And one of the things that my partner and I have found is that we've been able to have dinner with a lot more couples that we know that we have just sort of lost touch with because one of us will have randomly run into them. And we try to get something booked right then so we don't put it out of sight and out of mind. That's sometimes easier said than done, but that'd be my takeaway for folks.
That's actually a great idea. I, as a worker, try to make sure that at the end of every meeting we schedule wherever the next meeting is going to be, because you've got the people that are there, and it's, you don't have to try to find calendars. Like, okay, when do we want to meet again? You can agree it's 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 months, whatever it is, and you just get it on the calendar. And this is sort of the interpersonal aspect of that, that, you know, it's useful for work, but also useful for life. So I think that's great. I can imagine going out to dinner with friends, which, you know, we do some, and saying, okay, before we leave tonight, let's schedule the next dinner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to transition to one last thing for us to talk about, because I just found this very fascinating when I ran across it. And this is from Press Ganey, and very, very new, but they said in 2025, the number one driver of highly engaged organizations is creating a culture of respect. And we're in a tumultuous time.
Yeah.
And a lot of the polarization that I don't think we feel as much in the workplace, but it's certainly being amplified societally in a lot of our channels. And so this idea of creating a culture of respect, I mean, it's almost, you know, create a safe harbor at work from what is out in, you know, social media and other kinds of media. And they were some subcomponents in this Press Ganey report that said the things that are important are trust in the workplace, valuing or feeling valued in the workplace, authenticity and inclusion. And I just think about with this idea of social isolation,
mm-hmm.
and so many headwinds to that in the mass media kind of place, there is a role for work here to help people feel that section of that sense of connection and belonging. And I don't know, what do you think about that? Because you have certainly thought more about this as an HR leader than I have as a doc who's trying to help docs do their jobs better.
Yeah, we don't have enough time for me to go into all of my thoughts on this, but I love teeing up this conversation because I think this culture of respect is sort of a non-starter. And it's when people aren't feeling that is when you start to see not just poorer employee performance, but poorer organizational performance. If you don't feel like you're able to show, no, I'm not saying bring your whole self to work. That's also a different, mm-hmm. a different topic. But if you aren't able to feel like you've got the safety to voice an opinion, or you don't understand how your work ties into the broader work, in the absence of information, people will make something up. And so if you don't feel like people are telling you the whole truth for whatever reason, that they aren't respecting you enough as someone who is a valued contributor to the organization, you're not going to be able to bring your best. And I think for a long time, there was this stigma around vulnerability from leaders too. And one of the things that I have found builds trust and respect faster than almost anything else is showing a little bit of that vulnerability. There's been a lot that's happened over the last 5 years that has really made me, there were incidents that would make me come to work not as my full self. Something major had happened in the news, the death of George Floyd, some Supreme Court decisions that I found very challenging. Coming to work and saying, hey guys, like full transparency, not feeling my best today because there's a lot happening in the news. Know that if I'm a little bit delayed in responding, it's not you. I'm just having some trouble processing this. Gave people space to feel like they could feel those same things too, and instantly formed a little bit better relationship with us because they felt like if I had enough respect for them to say that, they could say the same thing to me.
Yeah. Well, you just described a theory of relationships that's out there where each person gradually shows little bits of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And if that vulnerability is accepted, it builds trust and familiarity. And then over time, people become more vulnerable and more trusting and more committed. And that, you know, it's a theory from, you know, interpersonal romantic relationships, those kinds of things, friendships. But, you know, you can see how someone as a employee, employer, worker, supervisor kind of relationship or peer workers, that same thing would be operational. And that would make sense with a highly engaged yeah. organization and all of those kinds of things. So I guess the tip there is one, to show some vulnerability, you know, and again, little bits of vulnerability.
Right.
It's not
showing up sobbing at work. Yeah, it's probably not the tone you want to set.
Yeah. I did have a boss one time that would come into my office at like 5 p.m. This was when I had small kids and was anxious to get home. And not that I'm not anxious to get home now, but even more anxious. And he'd come into my office and he would shut the door and be like, I just need to talk to you for a little while. And would tell me all these personal details. And he was like 30 years my senior. And I was like, okay, this is how the workplace works, I guess.
Oh, wow.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
So tip one, little bits of vulnerability, mm-hmm. not too much. And then the second thing is that there's a real importance to listening there. And particularly if you're the supervisor, I would guess that you can shut someone down pretty quick when they're showing a little bit of vulnerability. And you may have a sort of more precise way of saying that.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, listening is a lost art, and there's such a difference between listening and hearing. We talk a lot about like the different types of listening that you can do as a leader, but making someone feel heard is a very different thing. And something as simple as repeating, "I think what I heard you say is this," again, continues to foster that respect and shows that you are actually giving them your time and attention. I think then you have the opportunity to be a little bit more vulnerable then if it's pertinent to the conversation, but that's just one more of those things that can help build that trust.
This is great. Well, let's wrap up here. I do think we should wrap up with sort of what we're going to be doing to try to perform at a higher level coming up. And what I'm excited for is that we're going on vacation for spring break. And I'm looking forward to disconnecting. And it took me a long time to give myself permission to disconnect from work. And there will be people that can still reach me and whatnot. But we're going away for a week to Costa Rica. And
oh my gosh, have fun!
Yeah, and with my 15 and 17 year old, they're little adults now, big adults, and so it's fun traveling with them because they're not quite peers, but more like peers certainly than they are when they're little kids. What about you?
Most people that know me know I've been very involved in Big Brothers Big Sisters for a long time. I have a little through Big Brothers Big Sisters who is now 20, so maybe it's my not so little through Big Brothers Big Sisters. One of the things that we really love to do together is volunteer. Ironically, that's how we met, because I was volunteering with Big Brothers Big Sisters, but we are spending the day tomorrow with the Down Syndrome Association. My little is going to be a teacher. They're in art school at VCU, and this program is specifically to help teenagers navigate through school. So it's the perfect opportunity for them. I get to spend time with them. So being with them fills my cup. Being able to do good with them overflows it. So I am really excited to do that tomorrow.
Well, I'm proud of you for doing that, and proud of your little. And if we've learned anything in this first episode, it's that you're a better person than I am. So I hope everyone has a great week.
Thanks, everybody.